You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All righty then, welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We got a nice episode for you guys today. We're going to be talking about the Rob Blake presser, the hiring of Jim Hiller, other stuff coming out of that press conference around the Pacific, and then a seat at the round table for the month of January. It's going to be pretty scarce after the way we played, but we'll get to it anyways. Get in the chat, like, and subscribe. Let's go. All right, guys, welcome into the chat today. We guys are a lively bunch already. CJ getting the first comment here at 6:22. Let's go. Blake's press conference was interesting, to say the least. Also comes in to say, didn't deny already wants out, just was one of them. Over here, Cy, good evening, boys and girls. The boys are back. Lots to delve into today. How about Clark in the All-Star game? We're going to kind of mention him a little bit there, but nice little shout out there. Nav coming in with the early 10 buckaroonies. Have a great show, boys. Everyone, don't forget to like and subscribe. Really appreciate that. Sweet dreams there, Nav 21. Carter Scores coming in here with a let's go. The three amigos are back. We got Joe, has got some technical difficulty. We'll see if we can get him back in here in a little bit. Trapper 9 says, I just liked, I'm number 9. Let's hope that number goes up by the end of the show. Really appreciate that. Lee with the hey, y'all. And then Kings coming here. Zach, the Kings fan. What's up, fam? What's up, my man? Let's go, boys, from ACX419. And you guys are killing it this morning. So let's get going. If you guys want to throw some questions in there, we'll see if we can get to those. But we got a big show in here. Let's start it out with the presser there. So Rob Blake talked about the firing of Todd McClellan and answered some questions about the new head coach, what they plan on doing with the organization. Russell, you were there. What were your big takeaways from the presser?
Yeah, it was really contentious kind of room, it felt like. I mean, you can just tell that Rob Blake just did not want to be there. And a lot of the questions, it almost seemed like he was just giving a little, I don't want to say attitude, but giving a little bit more of a just yes or no response to a few. And he even said it himself. This is like one of the worst days that he's experienced being a GM and then having to fire one of his good friends and Tom McClellan. I mean, the press conference, there wasn't too many surprises, I thought. It's good to hear Victor Arvidsson's going to be back on Thursday. Good to hear what he expects to get from Jim Hiller as the new head coach. I think the biggest question or the biggest question I had going into it was, are we going to see any sort of changes in system or player deployment or lineups or anything like that? Because or is it just going to be you're looking to make a change just to make a change, just to kind of bring the boys up a little bit, try to change the team's kind of mentality a little bit. But his response to that was, it's just going to be a total different change. It's a totally different new person. So meetings will be different. Meeting times will be different. The way he communicates will be different. So I'm curious to see how that will translate on the ice and in the lineups and roster moves. But I think those are the kind of answers that Kings fans want to hear and we want to hear, right? I think the thing with McClellan, and we could talk about like him being let go, for me, it was really surprising just because I didn't see Rob Blake and Luke Robitaille kind of getting away from McClellan. It is certainly, in my opinion, it seemed like they were just going to kind of ride the wave and just figure it out at the end of the year, because McClellan is Rob Blake's guy. And now that he's gone, maybe Rob Blake's obviously on the hot seat now if things don't turn around. So to see him actually go, I was caught by surprise. But it does make sense. I mean, you lose what, three games, or you win three games in 17. Not a lot of coaches are going to survive that. So to see him go, it's not necessarily his 100% his fault. But a lot of the question marks that came into play during his time recently were the lack of adjustments that he would make. I mean, I just didn't see enough changes to warrant or to think that, okay, he's doing enough to try to turn things around here. Like defensively, we pretty much saw the same defensive pairings throughout this entire stint or these struggles that the Kings have been going through. Besides Brant Clark and Jordan Spence being switched in and out of the lineup, which even then was like, what are we doing here? So there were really no changes there up front. You heard Drew Doughty. After the Buffalo game, you heard Drew Doughty kind of go off on his teammates, and we saw the same lineup the next day. It's like, okay, well, like, how are you going to really change the mentality and the approach of your players if you're not really going to adjust too much? So I think those are maybe some issues that some people took hard to with McClellan and some of his adjustments. That's always kind of been his MO with his coaching tenure so far, just even going back to San Jose days. So to hear that Rob Blake is expecting Jim Hiller to just kind of come in and just shake everything up, I think a lot of people are happy to hear those comments come from him.
Do you think he's going to shake everything up? Because it didn't seem like there was any indication from Rob that that's what they talked about. He was kind of vague with, yeah, we talked offense, defense, and goaltending. Well, that's all three phases, and they said they didn't want to really change anything on the PK. So do you get a sense of that from the press conference, or do you from maybe other people that you talked to within the building?
Well, Rob Blake said it himself. He's like, they, as far as management, not necessarily the head coach, they'll make recommendations, but all in all, it falls on the head coach to make the final decision. So the thing that's interesting with Jim Hiller, and then I've learned just kind of reading about him, is that he's a very big guy in analytics. He's very big in analytics. He started an analytics company called True Performance with former NHLer Brad Wawenka back in the day. And that's eventually what got him hired to be an assistant coach with Mike Babcock in Detroit. So, I mean, if that's what he's going to be leaning on, then certainly some of the roster decisions, I mean, I'm looking at like Andreas Englund and Trevor Lewis, like some of these roster decisions or player deployments really go against a lot of what analytics are kind of telling us. So if he really is going to have the final say in terms of the lineups and the pairings and the forward lines, whatever, then you would expect to see some sort of adjustments and changes be made in the lineup. So we'll see what happens on Thursday, but if he's looking to shake things up, I would expect that to happen.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting there. And I saw a couple of people in chat. Well, if England is in the lineup, then he's fired, right? So, but I think that'll be interesting to see how they view that. You brought up that they let the head coach make the decisions on the lineup, but then he kind of contradicted himself when you asked the question about Clark and the deployment of him and how that works out. I mean, that was like a. Now, yeah. That one was an executive. That was a team decision.
That was an organizational decision, which was.
Yeah, so we have to get him games, but, you know, but the lineup is purely up to Todd. So, I just think that it's kind of a weird, like, hybrid thing that they were kind of saying to where, again, really not that much clarity when it comes to, you know, how much change we'll actually see.
Yeah, and that's what's so, I guess, refreshing kind of going forward. And it's not like, I'm not trying to be too critical of Todd McClellan, but these are all Rob Blake's kind of guys and Luke Robitaille's guys. Like that was his choice to be the head coach. And I know obviously it's his choice to bring in Jim Hiller as an assistant coach, but they're not necessarily connected as they were to Todd McClellan as Trent Yanni was and Rob Blake was. So when you have this new kind of mindset coming in, and he was brought in originally to fix the power play, and it did, I mean, he did fix it last year. I mean, this year they've had their struggles, but they're still middle of the pack. It's not necessarily like a big detriment like the penalty kill was last year for this team. So when you have a guy who's brought in who's not necessarily with the original group that comes in, I would think that it'd be a refreshing voice as far as the players when you put him at the head coaching position. So who knows what will happen as far as the lineups go on Thursday. But yeah, like I said, I expect to see some sort of adjustment because, I mean, you have to at this point. I mean, even they got the win in Nashville. Even then, I mean, the Kings did not play well. They eked out those 2 points and were saved by a really excellent performance by David Riddick and obviously the few goalposts that Nashville hit too. So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to Thursday and seeing who is paired up with who.
Let's see if we could try to add Joe. I think he's kind of worked some things out here. Joe, welcome into the chat, my man.
There he is.
Hey, thank you. I'm working on it. I don't know what is going on. I told you guys before we got on, I was doing video last night for the high school team, and my laptop was literally on fire. I could smell it. So I don't know what's going on with these speakers. So if there's any tech people here in the chat, feel free, but probably need a new laptop if I'm guessing. So how's it going?
So obviously, if you heard what we were talking about in the background as far as the deployment and how it might change under Hiller, Rob Blake talked about the room and how assistants kind of ride behind the head coach and echo the sentiment, but when they take the reins, the voice could change in that aspect. How you were assistant coach, I mean, you might feel maybe the same way about your own hockey team, but how do you think that will go towards the locker room of the Kings?
I think it's a really interesting dynamic because the assistant coaches are, you know, they're kind of a buffer a lot of times between player and head coach, and they're kind of delivering a different message. Generally speaking, going to be a little bit more trying to be positive, get guys going, things like that. Work on a little bit more of the technical side of things. So you have the ability to kind of be that more one-on-one with the players, I think, than a head coach does. He's kind of got to oversee the whole thing. So as I don't know if, you know, how Hiller is going to approach this as a head coach. I imagine it's going to be a tricky transition for him and the players, you know, because there's a different level of, like, you know, I don't want to say respect, because that's not to say that he didn't have respect before, but like he has a little bit of a different pressure on him now as a head coach, and some of the roles and responsibilities that he has are going to be different. So I think the players, it's a two-way street. You know, he has to understand that, but I think the players also need to understand that too. So yeah, I mean, I do think it's interesting. I obviously the level that I'm at is significantly different, but I do wonder sometimes how that would go if something were to happen for some reason. I'd be a head coach for, you know, a week or 2 weeks or whatever, which, you know, got to be that nothing like that has to come up. But, you know, it's different. It is definitely different. Like, my relationships with the players is going to be different than the head coaches. Just skating around in practice, talking to them, you know, kind of talking about little things here and there. It's different. So that said, I mean, this stuff happens. And, you know, Hiller's been around the game a long time. He's seen coaching changes, you know, before. So I'm not too concerned about his kind of evolution into being a head coach. You know, I was actually watching some Hiller press conferences back when he was in Toronto. It was preseason during the World Cup, and Babcock was off doing head coaching duties. So he was running the ship as kind of the de facto head coach during preseason, and he was doing the press conferences. Again, it's preseason, but it was in Toronto, so it's still probably a little bit
regular season game in LA.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think it's something that is totally foreign to him.
Now, Russ, obviously they decided to keep the hiring in-house with quite a few names, you know, thrown out there that are possible head coaching hires. They went with him pretty quickly. I assume they had this already figured out before they let Todd know. Was that a surprise to you that they went in indoors and they're looking to hire now an assistant coach instead of just bringing in a previous head coach that was available?
No, it's actually not surprising to me. I think what Joe kind of hit the nail on the head. The way I look at this team and a lot of the struggles that they've been going through lately, this team is too talented to be playing as bad as they've been playing. And I feel like this has been more of a mental aspect as far as like their actual skill and talent being performance on the ice. I mean, from everything I've, like, in terms of being around the team and whatnot, like, it just seems like there's really no cohesion in the locker room. And, I mean, Drew Doughty said it best right after the Buffalo game. So, when you have a player or an assistant coach who's been able to create those individual relationships and be a little bit more personal with his team, I wonder if you get now more of a respect with that assistant coach. And then knowing, like, okay, like, now we're going to be playing for a guy who we respect, who's created these interpersonal and one-on-one relationships with, and now he's going to be put in as his first head coaching position in the NHL. So I would hope that the players have that mindset to feel like, oh, we should start playing well for this guy. Like, we need to be playing our best. And if we really respect him as an assistant coach, which I think they do, then you would hope to see some turnaround performances on the ice too. So I don't know. I, like, with Hiller, I feel like he's created those relationships. Like, for like one example, I always watch PLD. Like, ever at practice, whenever I'm at practice, like, Pierre Dubois is the one player I'm always watching. And whether it's after practice, before practice, or even during practice, the coach I always find him talking to is Jim Hiller. And I see him staying on the ice after like 10 minutes, 15 minutes after practice, talking, just one, like Joe said, having those one-on-one conversations. So I feel like that, having that aspect where you have a coach who's already been kind of implemented into the locker room and is respected and whatnot, I feel like that'll help try to turn things around with the team in their current slide.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see who they hire as the assistant coach now with what you said about bringing somebody from within. A lot of coaches
DJ Smith is the assistant coach.
I thought that was assistant GM.
No, coach. Assistant coach. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Well,
so yeah, the former Ottawa Senator head coach who got fired, what, in December? He's now the assistant coach under – he worked with Jim Hiller in Toronto under Mike Babcock. So, but by all accounts, I mean, from everything I've read, DJ Smith is a very well-liked guy from all of his players. I think I read a quote from Morgan Riley saying in Toronto, saying he's the best coach he's ever played for. And Matt Martin said that you're getting a real personal, like a player's type of coach, and it's just what they need. So to hear that, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like when you have those coaches that you can relate to and have those conversations with, and I'm not going to say that they didn't have that with McClellan, but it certainly seems like that they're more open to having those maybe personal relationships with Jim Hiller, and hopefully you can see that now happening with DJ Smith. So I like the hires. I mean, personally, I like bringing in DJ Smith from everything I've read. Like, you want to have those player type coaches when you're going through these mental struggles that the Kings are going through. And the same thing with Jim Hiller. Like, I have a lot of, I'm not going to say that he's going to be the future head coach after the season ends, but if it goes well, like, I wouldn't be too surprised if they keep him on.
Yeah. And I think we have a coach like Hiller. This is his first go around as getting an opportunity as a head coach. So he's going to want somebody that he's comfortable with. He's worked with him before, obviously. And I think the fact that he lasted as long as he did in Ottawa was because of how well-liked he was and how much of the players loved him, because he severely, in my opinion, underachieved with that roster. And, you know, for whatever reason, but he was extremely well-liked by the players, which I think that suits perfectly for the Kings situation. Clearly, it seems like he's a likable guy. Hiller's comfortable with him. So actually, this is a really, really good fit for the current LA Kings situation.
What about here, SDR coming in here? We need a hard-ass Sutter type coach.
Do you?
You looked at Rob Blake, said he has no problems with how the locker room is from player to player. He said a lot of those hard messages get driven in by a player, like what Drew Doughty did. So do you need – is that the type of coach that they need to turn this thing around, or is it just a new voice?
I mean, it's – I don't know. Like, Drew Doughty's already been calling players out and his own teammates out. Like, you would imagine that's – all this hard-ass approach has probably already been done. So at this point, you have to find – if you're a player on the Kings, you have to find a reason to want to play for the coach at the helm. And, like, hopefully, like I talked about earlier, like if Jim Miller has been able to create these personal relationships with some of these players that McClellan hadn't, then you would hope to have that respect as for the head coach, with it being his first opportunity. So, I mean, it's the players have to look within themselves. It's on the players to turn this around. And this, like I said, like we can talk about McClellan's lack of adjustments or his lines or whatnot, but this team is too talented to be playing as poorly as they are. It's on them to turn everything around. So,
all right, we got a super chat here from Stop It Right Here, guys, with the $4.99. Thank you, appreciate that. How do you guys think the new staff plus Blake will go about playing the youth and trusting them more?
Well, I'm going to go. There's a couple things here. One, Blake, I really think that Blake's presser, like I know he said, we need to improve the, you know, all areas. Okay. Mm-hmm. But every time it started with the offense, improve the offense. We also need to improve the defense and the goaltending and yada, yada, yada. It's a lot of coach speak and hockey speak for, we got to improve the offense. So, and to kind of back that up a little bit. So we've talked about how the public models have the Kings still kind of top five overall and like expected goals and all that stuff. So in listening to the Hockey PDO cast earlier today, they have access to Sport Logic data. And the Kings, in terms of offensive expected goals, are 19th. That's not great. Vastly different from the public model. So I think when you look at Rob Blake sort of subtly hinting, in my opinion, my impression was the offense needs to improve. We're not getting enough. We're not scoring enough. Plus, if you hear what some of the private models are suggesting, that the Kings offensively are not good. Plus, it's Jim Hiller, who is known as an offensive guy, a power play guy. I think that all kind of comes together to say we need this team to get better offensively. I don't know what that's going to look like system-wise from a Hiller standpoint. We're just going to have to wait and see. I don't know what that's going to mean from a line combos thing. We're just going to have to wait and see. But I mentioned earlier, talking about in the other part of this question about playing the youth and trusting them the more. Now, mentioning that I watched some Jim Hiller press conferences from 2016, worth noting these were preseason games, but he was asked about a couple of different players, one of them being a young defenseman, Justin Hall, who I believe he's moved on to Detroit, I want to say, at this point in his career. Mm-hmm. But anyways, this was his first pro game that he was talking about. He said he went back on pucks and he broke us out. How many times have we talked about the ability to break out? It's not often that we've heard a coach in Los Angeles say he broke us out. Like that. So I don't know. I could be obviously reading way too much into it, but to me, that tells me that's the type of stuff that he's looking for as a coach. He broke us out. He got us out clean. He referenced Jake Gardner dancing on his feet. Like I sense that this is a coach that these are the types of things he's looking for. So I suspect he'll be more inclined to play and hopefully maybe trust the youth. We won't know until we see it, but you know, not trying to pretend like I know a lot about Jim Hiller, but just in doing a little bit of digging, you know, obviously his time with the Kings, but he's not exactly at the forefront of the media availability. So just reading between the lines of some of the Blake comments with the, I think he thinks this offense needs to improve and it should be better than it is. You've alluded to this, Russ, today, saying this offense is too talented. I think that's what this is all about. So I do think they're going to get more offense, and that could mean playing the youth a little bit more.
Hey, Russ, let me ask you a kind of a different angle to this question here. Obviously, Blake talked about the LTIR possibility for Lizotte. Turcotte came up for him, and it has played well so far. And we've been wanting the Clark-Spence combo to be on the ice at the same time. So with the extra opportunity with Turcotte and maybe the couple days before the first game, do you think that there's a chance for the two defensemen to get on the ice at the same time?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, like Joe just talked about, if Jim Hiller's just looking for pure offense and looking to improve that aspect, I mean, why not try to get two of your best young offensive defensemen on in the lineup, right? I mean, Andreas Englund is definitely not offense. He doesn't scream offense. He doesn't even really scream defense. So, yeah, I would hope that's what they end up doing. And it's funny, like,
I mean, with Clark fighting in the A, we don't need really England to throw hands. Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
So he's and it was good to hear Rob Blake talk about that too. He said it's good to see Clark have that in his game, which I think ties into a lot of stuff with Brant Clark and what they've noticed of him coming up, because he absorbs a lot of contact. And one thing that they've tried to improve with him on is his ability to kind of turn away from hits and not take too much contact, not take too much of those hits, especially when he's going back for pucks and in his own zone. So to see him have that fight is good to see. So, but as far as like what Joe just described, and like to hear Gardner dancing on his feet in his breakouts, like, isn't that Jordan Spence like to a T? Like, how many times have we seen Jordan Spence do that and skate away from pressure and find the open man, but just he can't find himself to get the opportunity more during 5-on-5 play, which makes no sense. So that's why I'm curious to see, like, with the thing with like with analytics and playing a role and as far as Jim Hiller becoming a head coach, I'm curious to see how much that mindset of his goes into these lineup constructions going forward. Because if you look purely at analytics, Gavrikov and Jordan Spence is probably is the best defensive pair that the Kings have iced all season. So, I mean, if you're looking to give more opportunities to those younger defensemen, maybe shake up the bottom pairings a little bit, and maybe you get Gavrikov Spence with a little bit of Clark Roy action on the bottom pair. That sounds pretty good to me.
I like it. I like it. I think Turcotte is going to be the biggest beneficiary here with the possibility of Lazat going to LTIR. You know, we talk about getting opportunities and taking advantage of those opportunities, right? And so you never know what's going to happen. And so now that he's able to do that, he's playing really well. You might look at him when Lazat comes back, inserting himself on the wing and making Rob Blake figure out how to keep him on the roster from a cap constraint. Because GMs can pretty much do anything these days with acquiring LTIR space or doing what have you. So having an extended opportunity for Turcotte, who was put in the 1C role for the Reign, where Tynan has been there all year in his game down there, really could see him make that push. And we saw how energetic they were towards the end of the season. We're going to need that for the final 30-something odd games to make a push to get into the playoffs and make some noise. So I think that will be the main beneficiary here, and hopefully Hiller recognizes that and bangs on Rob Blake's door to keep him up, because they're going to need that going down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, if like Rob Blake said it best, like, they're just purely looking at wins and losses now. He said he wasn't really like that before, but now it's about wins and losses. And probably his job is in question too if they don't end up winning. So if you're trying to win games, you should figure out a way to ice the best lineup you can possibly can. And that includes Alex Turcotte, who looked incredibly good these last two games. I know I wasn't on the last pod to talk about him, but I mean, man, those two games, like, we saw everything that we had heard about from his draft profile: puck hound, 200-foot game, tenacity, constantly like that mosquito on the ice that we see with Blake Lazat. That was Alex Turcotte with even more skill than probably Lazat brings. So, I mean, man, like, if you pull Alex Turcotte out of the lineup now after the showing he's had, because he was pretty much the only one player that was really showing enthusiasm in those games. I mean, that goal that he scored against Nashville, I mean, when have we seen a player in the last 2 months show that much excitement after scoring a goal? That smile, that like was, that made me feel like great. Like, I wanted to jump up and pound glass, whatever. Like, man, like, I wanted, like, I'd run through a wall for that guy. So you would hope to have that kind of energy in the lineup going forward to ignite a little bit of success on this team that they've been lacking.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something interesting there. Go ahead.
Well, so what I'm interested in seeing is, you know, the Kings kind of have built their decor around McClellan, right? I think they didn't. They don't exactly have a modern day defense group, right?
Like, their system and what they play to, yeah.
Right, and it's worked. Like, defensively, it has worked. There's no doubt about it. But I've been saying for a long time, I don't think there's nearly enough skill on this blue line, and you know, and now that, you know, the team is having trouble scoring. Now, part of this could be some puck luck. They're shooting like 5 or 6% during the stretch. I mean, that's not going to continue. But still, I mean, when you limit your upside on the back end, it ain't going to help your offense. And the Kings at their best, you know, they've got a lot of defensive defenseman type of guys in there. Gavrikov, Roy, Mikey Anderson, Andreas Englund. I mean, that's all your whole four-sixth of your defense group right now is focused on defending. And so Hiller's hands are a little tied in that sense. I mean, obviously he can play Clark and Spence in the same group, but there is offensive players in the forward group for sure, which makes it kind of a unique setup, I suppose. So I am interested to see what he does kind of from a system standpoint, because I think he's got to be a little cautious, just only because he has what he has in the back end. I mean, you're not going to all of a sudden turn Gavrikov and Roy into like Devon Taves and Sam Girard. Okay, that's just not going to happen. It's just not the style that they play. So how he massages that and what he does with that from a system standpoint will be interesting to see.
Let's get into this next part here. So it was brought up about Artie. They asked one question about Arthur Kaliev and him being dissatisfied and, you know, possibly trading him away or this or that, and kind of matrixed the question a little bit and kind of swept it under the rug. But Russ, what do you feel about this situation there? We brought up in the last pod and the rumblings around the other reporters there. Do you feel like this is a possibility come trade deadline, or are we kind of just going to see somebody sit on their hands and it is what it is?
It's definitely a possibility from everything we've heard and what Rob Blake has talked about. I've heard that he's just incredibly unhappy at Kaliev in terms of his playing situation. And apparently over the summer, they had asked him to stay in LA and work on a lot of stuff. And he adhered to that. He stayed in LA and did all the stuff that the coaching staff asked him to do. So that was why I kept asking McClellan about Kaliev during the preseason and during training camp. And he kept saying like, yeah, he's got the guy who's done everything we've asked of him, and he's going to get the opportunity. And that was when he was playing, I think, with Dubois and Fiala to start the year. So to see that, like, we were thinking like, okay, well, they're going to give Kaliev a real shot here. And what's so strange is like, it seems the leash for Kaliev is so much shorter than what it is from so many other players on this team. And I like, obviously we don't know what goes on behind closed doors and whatnot. So I'm not going to say, but everything that we can see, the on ice and the statistics and everything that we hear from, it makes no sense for them to not play him. I mean, his on-ice metrics speak for themselves. I can't remember too many glaring mistakes that he's made that have really led to goals going the other way or in the Kings' net. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say he's been the best player on the team, but to see him being healthy scratched over players like Trevor Lewis and Jared Anderson Dolan, I mean, no disrespect to them, but when you have a 22-year-old with the upside that he has, you have to figure out a way to get him in the lineup and fix his game and not just have him sit in the press box for a couple weeks. I mean, that doesn't really make any sense. So this talk of them maybe possibly looking at trading Arthur Kaliev, I couldn't be more against that. I mean, I still see a ton of upside in this player. He's obviously got the shot. He's got the size, and you can't really teach two of those components. So if he can figure out that more of that mental side of the game and try to hone that a little bit more, I feel like you get a good middle six type winger in your team. So don't give up on him yet.
Yeah, well, we could see maybe the Hiller coaching help with this too, right? We'll give him some. Yeah. Give him some pub up on the third line. Maybe you see, the numbers get switched around there. Also, he played well when he played with Turcotte. It looked like he played decently there. Right. So maybe he gets some run back with his former teammate. Joe, you're about to speak, so go ahead and just lay it on me, big guy.
I was just going to say regarding Kaliev, yeah, like I this could be a fresh start for him. It could be. That's speculation. We have no idea what the Hiller-Kaliev relationship is or if Hiller agrees with all this. I don't know. I'm not all there with Kaliev. I've seen it in spurts. I just haven't seen it consistently enough. I'm more than willing to give him another shot here with a fresh coach, fresh start, fresh ideas, maybe a change in the tweaking system and tweaking his role and responsibility. I'm all for that. But I agree that his leash has seemed shorter than others, but I think he's a different player than most of the other guys, that he hasn't really contributed a whole lot consistently at 5-on-5 in all three zones of the rink. So I go back and forth with Kaliev. I see the talent, I see the upside there, but you know, he does have to start to show some things more consistently. I will say, Elliot Friedman has mentioned on his 32 Thoughts podcast and on two of the last three pods, I think, talking specifically about Arthur Kaliev, and tied the Kings and Kaliev with, quote, a forward with jam, which should scare a lot of people. Now, that was pre-McClellan firing, so I don't know. I'm not going to suggest that we were going to go and trade Kaliev for Zach McEwen, but we did see the Kings acquire a forward with jam last year. So, listen, that can mean a lot of things, okay? that doesn't necessarily mean it's a player that can't play. So we'll see if the new coach does offer a fresh opportunity for Kaliev. I'm open to it, but at the same time, I haven't been on this pod sitting here beating the drum that we've got to find a way to get Arthur Kaliev in the lineup because I don't think he's totally earned it.
So yeah, but you got to look at comparing him to other players that are getting lineup like ice time, wouldn't you figure out
you're going to drag it on me. Yes, Russ, I would play him over Trevor Lewis. Okay.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like let's just say what it is. I mean, yes. He's getting benched over players that shouldn't be playing.
I think overall game, I agree that perhaps the upside isn't quite there, but I don't hate what Anderson Dolan and what Grundstrom bring to the table. They can be in a rotation with Kaliev, like Kaliev's right in that mix, but I don't think that he has definitively outplayed those two. I'm going to give you Lewis, but that's a layup, Russ. Okay.
I'll take it.
We know that one. The other ones, though, I'm open. Like I said, I'm open to it. I'm here for another opportunity for the kid, but he's had some opportunities. So hopefully this is a good one.
Well, that's the thing though, is like, he's had the opportunities and I mean, we haven't really seen, I mean, obviously he hasn't really taken the opportunity by force too much to like light up the score sheet or box score like that. But I feel like he's played pretty well, like to know and more. I mean, mm-hmm. some of his metrics speak to that too. So I would hope they'd give him that other shot. And one thing too, to think about, like Arthur Kaliev is younger than Alex Turcotte. And we've been waiting so long. And I get that there's a different journey there, but we've been waiting so long and been so patient with Turcotte. I mean, I don't know if we've been patient, but we've been waiting for him to come and he's finally arrived and we're all excited. And Arthur Kaliev is still younger than him. So I think you just have to be more patient. And I don't know what the trade, I don't even know what you'd be able to get for a player like Arthur Kaliev at this point. I feel like you would have to be like a package deal to maybe get a better player in return, but it's not like you're going to get like a 1-for-1, like decent NHL starter in return from him, unless Rob Blake just pulls a fast one over.
Because I was looking at, now again, like I said, forward with jam can mean a lot of things, but just scouring and figure because of the cap, it would have to be kind of dollar for dollar. So you look at what Kaliev makes, that's not a player worth acquiring. Okay. So if I'm dealing, we talked about this, I think last show, Russ, like if I'm dealing Kaliev, preferably it's in a package, a bigger package to acquire a significant upgrade somewhere. That's tough to do because of salary cap, etc., which is why there has to be another player included. I don't know that the Kings are willing to do that right now or what their plans are. So I get nervous when I hear they'd be open for Kaliev for that type of player, if only because that type of player has to be basically league minimum. And if I'm talking about league minimum players, Arthur Kaliev's, I'd rather have that talent than, you know, something else.
All right. Well, before we get into our other topics here, we're going to bring you a segment here from our sponsor here at DraftKings. Looking for a super offer for the Super Bowl? DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. New customers can bet on the big game and turn $5 into $200 instantly in bonus bets. Last time I checked, the odds were still +2 for the Niners. Over-under was at 47.5. So make your wagers on the Super Bowl. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 58 with code THPN. The crown is yours. Side note there, I saw that the referee group for the Super Bowl had the highest percentage of hitting the under for bets.
Okay.
Good. Kind of little, 47. Little... Totals at 47 right now.
And there's already crazy controversy coming out of the Super Bowl already. So with the practice facilities. Yeah. So it's already rigged. Taylor Swift and practice facilities. But I just saw how is that possible? How do you give one team a $200 million indoor facility and the Niners are practicing outdoor in the rain in a makeshift field that doesn't even belong to UNLV? They had to create a random stuff. The players are saying it's like walking on a sponge out there. Like it's not responsive, and they're out in the rain. Like you don't think like they're not practicing for 8 hours. Like you can't have both team at the same facility. You know, right. like
figure things out, boys.
It's the NFL, and I have no idea what's going on. So
as a Kansas City plus 2.5 holder, I love it.
Yeah, but you want me as a happy
host. Yeah,
we want happy host
here. San Fran by 2. I'm happy.
There we go.
Let's flip it over here. A little mini topic before we get into the big chunk here. Clark at the All-Star game. So this little break allowed him to go back down play. Won the skill shooting competition 4 for 4. You know, just made it happen, and played well in the game. So I just want to give him his stick taps there. He looks like he's having fun. He was stoked. I mean, 4 straight, and then he get the big fist pump. Definitely the opposite of the Kuznetsov or whatever from Tampa in the All-Star game, just mailing it in.
Kucherov, yeah,
and just mailing it in there. And so, which makes no sense to me. I get it. They offered like $1 million for the winner of that thing. Like, but like, you want to put some effort into it, I guess. Like, I don't know.
He doesn't care. He was probably drunk when it was going on.
So what about, oh man, Buble admitting to taking microdosing before the draft over there. That was crazy. But six taps to Clark, didn't go down there, making a statement. Hopefully he gets brought up for the second half of the season. On our next topic, around the Pacific or around the West, really, we had two huge trades as well as some major shakeups in the standings. So as the standings sit right now, Avalanche 1, Stars 2, Jets 3 in the Central, separated by a total of 3 points. In the Pacific, you have Canucks, Knights, Oilers, separated by a pretty decent margin of 12. And the two wild card spots right now are your Kings with 56 points, Blues with and Predators tied with 54, and the Kraken right behind that at 52. So since we last talked, obviously we have sunk out of the Pacific 1-2-3. We right now would be playing Colorado in the first round if that were to happen, if the season were to end now. Not ideal at all. So let's get into the Pacific here first. Are there any teams that have picked up that you really enjoy or are making some noise, and then we'll get into the big trades?
Not really. I mean, it kind of seems like all the same teams are just humming along, unfortunately, for the Kings. So Vegas is kind of figuring things out, I guess, after their little slide. Edmonton might never lose again, and Vancouver is a solid team. So yeah, I'm pretty petrified right now.
So just to piggyback off that, like looking quickly at last 10, Colorado 7-2-1, Dallas 7-2-1, Winnipeg 6-3-1, Vancouver 8-0-2, Vegas 6-3-1, Edmonton 10-0, LA 3-5-2. So everybody else seems
to one be of these doing... things are not like the other.
So yeah, exactly. Everybody else seems to be doing quite all right in the West except for Los Angeles. So we'll see how this shakes out. But no, I agree. As you mentioned, Randy, and we'll kind of touch on the trades a little bit in a second. But I mean, obviously Edmonton is an absolute wagon right now. I would just say and reiterate, you know, and maybe this is a segue into the deal, but Vancouver isn't going anywhere, people. They're not going anywhere.
Come on.
Let's get into it here. Elias Lindholm traded from Calgary to Vancouver for Andre Kuzmenko on Wednesday, as well as some other picks here. So Calgary will also receive Vancouver's first-round pick, a conditional fourth in 2024 NHL draft, and defenseman prospects Hunter, I'm not going to even try to pronounce that last name, and Yoni Yermo So big center here. Lindholm has 32 points, 9 goals, 23 assists in 49 games for the Flames this season. Man, Vancouver gets a big body in, down the center, looking really good there and adding a very strong piece.
Well, that big body is actually going to be playing on the wing, apparently. So they have him playing. I forget who they're playing with, but yeah, they have him starting out on the wing in Vancouver, which I would have loved to see him in LA do. I know the price that they paid, first of all, I think Craig Conroy and the Flames did incredible here. Like, they did a really good job. I'm trying to find the stats, but I believe that defenseman that they got from the OHL has like a ridiculous amount of points. And leads all defensemen in points. He's like got like Brent. He's putting up like Brant Clark numbers. I believe. I could be wrong there.
Whoa, but slow your roll there, buddy.
I'm just saying. the superhuman Clark, but it is what it is. But yeah, like with Vancouver, I think this is a perfect get for them. If you could put Lindholm down on the wing or even play him in the middle, either way, solid get. And it pretty much affirms what everyone's been saying, that they're here and they're not going to go anywhere, like Joe said. So. Sucks.
It's a win-win deal. I mean, I think if you're trading a guy, Lindholm, who he came out after, I think, and said that he didn't say he didn't want to stay, but clearly they weren't seeing eye to eye in terms of what they wanted, in terms of, you know, what Calgary wanted, what Lindholm wanted. So the likelihood of him re-signing seemed somewhat low. So for them to go and trade him for a bunch of – listen – there's a lot of, they're all lotteries right now. Kuzmenko had the big year last year, kind of buoyed by a really high shooting percentage, but there's a talented player there. You mentioned the defenseman prospect, where I think there's a second defenseman prospect who's like a little bit more of a project, couple picks. So like there's pieces here. I mean, there's certainly the opportunity that none of them pan out, but I think they took a lot of dart throws. And I think that's what you got to do for, you can get that many dart throws for a player that is, again, all but likely not to resign. I think they did a really nice job. And I think Vancouver did a really nice job trading some bits and pieces. They didn't trade a top prospect. One of their top two or three anyways. The pick's going to be late in the first round. Kuzmenko was a healthy scratch. I think this is a win-win deal for both teams. And Vancouver gets a guy that is extremely versatile. I think what we'll talk about this with Winnipeg too, the players that these two teams added are not only really good players, kind of Lindholm can play higher in the lineup. Like he can play a first line role, I think, but both he and then with Monahan with Winnipeg, is they're just so versatile. They can comfortably play center and wing. I know there was talk about Dubois when the Kings got him, and I never really loved it. But, oh, well, Dubois can play center and wing. It's like, I don't think so. I mean, I know he has played wing in the past. I do not view him ever as a winger, except for maybe in a spot here or there. Late in the game, you put him on a line with Kopitar, whatever, stuff like that, situationally. He's a centerman, and I don't look at Lindholm and Monahan that way. I think they genuinely can play all over the ice, and I think that's just really beneficial from a versatility standpoint. So I think both teams did really well here, both Calgary in kind of restocking and Vancouver adding a significant piece to their top six.
It was good to hear Blake say that he wants Dubois at the center ice position. So that was good to hear.
He's a center.
Yeah, he is. Just to add on real quick, that I looked up the stats, that Hunter defenseman that they picked up, that third rounder, 61 assists in 49 games in the OHL. So, I mean, who knows if that'll translate to the NHL success, but decent numbers.
Yeah. You gotta play well at the level you're at before you can move up. So that,
yeah, exactly. I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Speaking of doing what you got to do, Al Smith coming in here big with a nice little 30 burger. Telling you all to hit that like button, folks. We got 82 people in this chat, so punch that like button. Every little bit helps. We're trying to cruise to 100 subs. We're a little bit over 912, I think, right now. So hit that like button. If you're not subscribed, hit
the 1,000 subs. We're getting close to 1,000 there, Ryan. Let's get it right. Yeah, we're getting there.
44% like ratio. 44% like.
We're getting the advanced analytics to this.
The analytics. Love it.
So let's get into this other trade here for Winnipeg. So not exactly in the Pacific, but definitely in the playoff hunt for somebody that we could be playing here. So Montreal trades Sean Monahan to the Jets. Montreal will receive a first-round pick in 2024, conditional third selection in 2027. The 29-year-old forward has 35 points, so 13 goals, 22 assists in 49 games. and has played every game after being limited to 25 last season from injury. So seems to be back and healthy. What do you guys view this trade as, boys?
I really like the player. I think the first, you know, I think the first round pick is a tick on the high side for Winnipeg, but I think there's teams that clearly needed help down the middle. Winnipeg is one, but also Colorado's another one. And I wonder how much goes into this as so Lindholm's off the board. Winnipeg was interested in Lindholm by at least according to reports. So that's one, probably the biggest center is off the board. So if you're Winnipeg, it's like, okay, well, now we've got, we lost one opportunity. We know Colorado is going to be looking to add a forward because it's, I still don't think they've really fully found that second line center has the Avalanche. So if you're Winnipeg, you've got a divisional opponent that you may see, you're chasing down for the division you may see in the first round. Are you willing to just pay that little extra to just make sure that you get what, if they assume they considered him the next best option on the center market in Sean Monahan, I'm okay with it. I don't hate it. Listen, I know there was talk, we talked about potentially as Winnipeg, where are they? Are they going to be sellers? Are they, you know, I think they what they did with the PLD trade was they kind of retooled and just kind of reshaped their roster. And then clearly once they signed Scheifele and Hellebuck, they're in, like, they're not sellers. Clearly they were committed and they've had a nice season here. So why not? I kind of like the deal. Again, it's a first seems a little heavy and I think there's another conditional pick to it, but hey, go get your guy because it might be Colorado now that would have added him, or maybe they go add somebody else like a Henrique or something along those lines. So I think they saw this as an opportunity to, you know, to stay and keep themselves in that mix for a deep playoff run. So I like the ad.
Yeah. I don't know if how Nemestikov, cause I believe he was their 2C so far this season. I don't know how they would have been confident in his ability to be the 2C going to the playoffs. So yeah, I get that part. I mean, you could just put Velarde at center. Apparently he's a center. So, but I like the move for Winnipeg. You could just sense that they're going to be a lockdown defensive style team. They're going to rely on their goaltender and they're going to rely on their defense to win them games. We saw that with the long streak that they had of what, not allowing three goals in a game. I forget how long it was, but it was the longest in their history. So they're going to be a defensive style team. So to add Monahan, who's now a center, he could play that top six center role for them. Like Joe just said, it's just another versatile player that they can have up front that can play anything anywhere on the ice in any situation too. So penalty kill, power play, wherever. So I thought they paid a good price for it. I have a buddy who's an Avalanche fan who is, he's pissed because he had his eyes set on Lindholm. And now that Monahan is gone, it's like Henrique. Yeah. I don't know. Like, does that sound really turn to say, well, I mean, with the Avalanche, it's weird. Like that central division, like it's really top heavy right now with Winnipeg, Dallas, and Colorado. Nashville's kind of floating around there, but I don't really see them. I know obviously the Kings are kind of fighting with Nashville and St. Louis, which is fucking horrible, but it is what it is. So, but with Colorado, it seems like they're going to have to be just like this top heavy team and rely on McKinnon and all the horses and McCarr to really carry them unless they find out. Maybe they go the goaltender route and try to shore up that situation. But man, like, I don't know, like that central division is going to be interesting to watch. And I'm going to be curious to see how that 2-3 matchup in the playoffs goes. Cause one of those teams, that's going to be a really good team to lose. And at this point too, if as a Kings fan, like I'm looking at the playoff picture in the Pacific division, man, Vancouver, please keep on winning. Just keep on winning. We'll take a wild card spot. And if Vegas and Edmonton want to play each other in the first round, fine with me. Let's get one of those teams out of it, and we'll take the wild card. And hopefully it's not Colorado that the Kings have to face. Because if the Kings have to play Vancouver in the first round, I'll take it. I'd rather – we've seen it happen before, obviously, with a different team. But I don't know. I'll throw this to you.
If we're the wild card and we play either Avalanche, Stars, or Jets, who do you think we match up best with?
Stars.
Winnipeg.
I say Stars.
Stars. It's hard to say because I want to see what the Kings under Jim Hiller are like. The Stars are fast. I don't know how the Kings are going to stop Roope Hintz, Jason Robertson. They have had a coming out party with Thomas Harley now, who's an incredible defenseman who took over
Wyatt big Johnson minutes. Is a great forward too.
I've continually underappreciated Dallas, and I don't know why, but I'm really getting on board with them because you have elite defensemen now with obviously Heiskanen's an absolute stud, but Harley is evolving and he is a legitimate, like he's a stud defenseman right now. So they have two outstanding top pair defensemen. And you combine that with what they can bring up front with some of the speed they've got. And, oh, by the way, one of the best goalies in the league. It's tricky.
It's funny that neither one of us said Colorado. If we probably look back at the win-loss records against all three of those teams, I feel like the Kings probably have the best winning percentage against Colorado than they do with Winnipeg and Dallas. But, man, like
– Nah, I don't want to.
Get me away from the. I thought, did you see McKinnon's goal today? Like, holy hell. That guy was shot out of a cannon, made one move, and boom, passed John McBain. That guy is unreal the way he's playing right now, and he just turns it up to another level. I mean, but the reason I said Dallas because and not Winnipeg, it's like if I saw Gabe Vilardi score a big playoff goal against the Kings, I'd probably just crawl into the corner and just cry myself to sleep. So I just hope that doesn't
happen. It'd have to probably be Winnipeg for me because every time the Kings play the Stars, I mean, they're going to be playing four of their games here, and I haven't seen a Kings win in Dallas in, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, so that would be an automatic loss. Yeah, all right, yeah, or I'm just not allowed to go. I probably couldn't afford it, to be honest with you, the way the tickets are getting up there. So, man, yeah, McKinnon's an absolute stud, though. You don't want to, he's probably the best player on any of those three teams, and, you know, any of those types of those guys can dominate a series.
And don't forget about Makar. Like, you know, let's not brush him aside. And we've seen what I know. Teams, people get, you know, knock on Edmonton for being top heavy. They've beaten the Kings 2 years in their own playoffs. So we've seen two players be able to take over series. So wouldn't be the first time that a duo, in this case, be McKinnon and Makar, just dominate a series and take it over. So I'd rather avoid them as long as I can.
Isn't Landeskog getting back from injury as well, or is he almost back?
It's entirely possible, yes.
No, that's scary. That's so scary. Just Vancouver. I give me that matchup.
That's why actually, like, Henrique isn't a sexy name, but I could see him fitting Colorado just fine. You know what I mean? Like he's not a wow player, he's not a big time point producer, but I actually, like, he wouldn't have been my first choice, obviously. Like, obviously, Lindholm, if I could have gotten Lindholm for Colorado, something like that. But I don't think Henrique is a bad add to that team. Because then you've got, with Lekin in there, too, now you can still have a stronger spine than you've got now. And obviously, they're going to be willing to pay a first because they're a cup, you know, they're here to win a cup, and they're set up to do it. So, be curious to see if there is something else that's more available than we're aware of. You know, the names right now down the – a name to keep in mind, I don't know what Buffalo's going to do with Casey Mittelstadt.
Okay? Oh, man.
So just that – you've got Tage Thompson, you've got Dylan Cousins. They're locked up for the next 8 years, 7 years, whatever it is. Are they going to lock up Casey Mittelstadt, who's an RFA at the end of this year, to play third-line center? I don't know. They've experimented with him on the wing. I know Cousins has played the wing here and there, but I think both of those guys are true centers. So I don't know what happens with Mittelstadt. I see Zegras in the comments. So there may be some interesting names at the center position that are more available than we may think. So we'll see what happens.
Zegras on Colorado, like if he tries a lacrosse move when they're down by like a couple of goals, McKinnon might just punch him in the face right there.
The Ducks should not trade Zegras, in my opinion, by the way.
They should, in my opinion, by the way.
They should.
But real quick, like you mentioned Mittelstadt. I've been a huge fan of Mittelstadt going back to, I forget which years it was, but when he was playing for USA during the World Junior Championships, he was incredible. Like probably the best player on the team. by far. I think he was on the team when they played that outdoor game in Buffalo, if I'm mistaken.
I think you're right. Yes. Yep.
So what's the deal with him? Like, you're obviously near there and you hear a lot more about Buffalo. What's going on there? I haven't heard his name come up, so that's kind of a surprise to me.
It's just the fact that so we've seen Buffalo lock up their young players, right? They did it with Tage Thompson. They did it with Dylan Cousins, both centers. They've done it with Rasmus Dahlin, Matthias Samuelsson, all locked up. Owen Power, they've signed. So the question now is, what do you do with Casey Mittelstadt, who's a 25-year-old, finally kind of having his breakout season? He started to last year too, but now he's starting to produce like the player that they thought he would produce at. He's making $2.5 million. He's an RFA. What's going to happen? What type of contract are they looking at? Are they going to ink him to a long-term deal? And if so, where is he playing? Is because Tage Thompson's your number one center.
Yeah.
Dylan Cousins is your number two center. Like I said, both Thompson and Cousins have had some, you know, games on the wing, and they've played wing here and there. I think they're both viewed as centers, though. I think that's where the organization wants them. So are they going to pay? What do you pay Casey Mittelstadt? And how long do you pay Casey Mittelstadt? What does Casey Mittelstadt see himself as? Is he a top six center in his mind? Because Cousins and I think both Cousins and Thompson have missed time this year, and Mittelstadt's been elevated and has done well. So that's where it becomes a really interesting conversation, is what do we do with him? Do we sign him for long term, and he's our third line center? Does he want to do that? So that's kind of where the conversation has been. Again, there hasn't been a long-term deal agreed to, like we've seen with Buffalo with a handful of their other young stars. So, and what do they do? Do they trade him for assets? I don't know that Buffalo is in that mode right now. They have, if anything, they've got assets to deal. My thought is they need to trade him for a piece. So that's where maybe Colorado is not a fit, because I don't know how Colorado, they're probably not in a mood to do that. But that's – so the Mittelstadt and Buffalo thing is interesting. It could be something where they just kick the can down the road and it's a one-year RFA deal or a bridge deal or something. But that's where that is right now. And it's at least a potential interesting name that's on the market right now. Or I should – maybe he's not on the market, but it is out there because of the contract situation.
Very interesting to see how
– the Kings uniform. I'm just throwing it out there. He's a great player.
Yes.
So PLD for Mittelstadt, is that what we're doing?
No. Sure, let's go.
All right. Well, we don't know what's going on there, but we know what's going on here with the Olympics. The Olympics are back, boys.
Let's go.
World Championships as well. It's all going to start off with the four country tournament, where they're saying that it's going to be Team USA, Canada, Finland, and Sweden. They're going to have it to where it's a round robin, 3 points for a win, yada, yada, yada. And then the two people with the highest will play in the final. So that'll be the first peek at best on best. But then the World Championships and the Olympics are going to rotate every 2 years. So we're going to see best on best, boys, coming here all the way through 2030, I believe, is what the negotiation has been with. So what is your guys' view on this? Obviously, it's great for hockey, I believe. But like, I don't think the NHL could have done this sooner enough.
Oh, man. Like, when I saw this news come down, like, I almost jumped out of my seat. Like, I've been waiting for the NHL to go back in the Olympics for years. This has gone on far too long where, I mean, it's just as a USA fan, like, I don't hate it that we haven't seen McDavid in a Canadian uniform, but as a hockey fan, it's total disgrace that we haven't seen that happen. So, I mean, now that we were able to get McDavid, Makar, MacKinnon, Crosby all up against the Tkachuks, Matthews, Eichel, the Hugheses, like my head is about to explode, because this is like what hockey fans dream of, is that real true best on best. Like, you know, obviously you don't get that in the All-Star game. You don't get that at the World Championships, because like, it's just who goes. It's never really full good teams. But now that you're going to get that in the Olympics where it really matters, oh man, like I'm so pumped, and I got chills just thinking about the lineups that we might see. And I don't know. It's going to be incredible. Like, you think about, like, 2030, we could see, like, Quentin Byfield and Brant Clark play for Team Canada, which would be incredible. Alex LeFerrier on Team USA. Let's get it going.
Yeah, I'm fired up. I mean, this is awesome. I mean, it sucks that it's taken this long, but I mean, I just echo what Russ says. I don't know that there's anything else really to add. I love Olympic hockey. It's one of my favorite things to watch, and the fact that we're going to be getting, you know, best on best back is I love it. I think it's great. So I'm all for it.
I think it'll be interesting there. Paris has already changed its designs. They were going to build, I believe, a international competition size rink, and now they're going to build an NHL size rink to accommodate most of the NHL players playing on that most of the time. I heard that they've changed their outlook on that. So it's going to be something major. And I mean, you're looking at what 2026. I mean, you're looking at, you know, is it going to be McDavid and then Bedard right behind him? Is Bedard going to get on that stacked roster? You're going to have some other players coming up. I mean, with the way Q's playing now, he might make the Canadian Olympic team as a fourth liner. Who knows? Lieb coming back in here with a $10 donation. Appreciate it, Lieb. Are we worried that negotiations between the NHL and the IOC might work as badly as they always do? So do you think is there a fear of this falling apart?
Of course. Like, I'm not like 100% like confident that this is actually going to happen. I mean, if it doesn't, I'd be incredibly pissed because getting my hopes up like this is terrible. But yeah, I mean, from everything we've heard and seen, like how they've kind of juggled this like back and forth with Bettman and the IOC, it's like what the hell are we doing here? So after all of that, like, it gives me no 100% belief that this is going to happen. I'll wait until that puck actually drops between whoever, which teams are playing to start. But it certainly seems like that four nation tournament is going to happen next year, which when it originally was announced, I was like, what the hell, like, what is going on here? Like, just give us the Olympics. But now that they announced this and the Olympics, or this four nation tournament to be like a prelude to the Olympics the year after, like, okay, that works for me. And it sounds like the players are pretty cool with it too. Like, they're really pumped for it. I think I heard McCarr talking about it. So yeah, like, it's nervous time to hope that this goes through, because I think a lot of hockey fans, this is what they've been waiting for a long time.
I mean, it's there's always, whenever the IOC is involved and, you know, the NHL with this, is you can understand some trepidation, but I don't know that Bettman throws this stuff around lightly. So I feel pretty good about it. If he says that they're in, then they've obviously had negotiations get to a point where there's got to be somewhat of an agreement here. So
and they're throwing out marketing already. So like it seems that kind of thing kind of puts a solidification there.
This might be controversial. I don't know, but like, they have to figure out a way to get Russia there, Team Russia. I mean, don't name them Russia if you don't feel comfortable doing it. But like, come on, like, what are we doing here? Like, these players are already playing in the NHL. You have to see Team Russia in the Olympics too. Like, that's they're one of the best teams. So if you want to have a true Olympic competition, figure out a way to get Russia in there too. Like, even like that last World Cup they did, I know a lot of people were really cool with it and it was really fun, but to me it was just like a big gimmick. Like, Team Europe and North America, I hated that. I might be in the minority there, but as a USA fan, when you see like Austin Matthews and some of these good players that probably would have been on USA at that time, it's like, okay, you're kind of taken away from that. And it just didn't feel like a true competition, international competition at all.
No, it didn't. I mean, you had Americans playing against Americans and Canadians playing against Canadians. It's just got to be, I don't know. It was fun. It was extremely exciting to watch. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, it didn't feel like an international competition. So I didn't hate it, but it was also a nice way to get more great players involved, because it'd be a lot of those players that maybe wouldn't have made those US and Canada teams because of their youth and just how deep those other rosters were. So it was at least a fun way to see them. And then you get an opportunity to see a guy like Andrei Kopitar play for Team Europe, because, you know, Slovenia is not going to be in a tournament like that. So I went back and forth. Well,
so Slovenia, they're actually playing. So this, I'm going to ask Andrei Kopitar next time I see him. Their qualification round for the Olympics, the next Olympics, is actually in August. They play against, I have to bring it, look it up, but Slovenia is in the last qualification round for the final three spots of the Olympics. So I'll be curious to see if Kopitar ends up playing in that tournament. I know he has in the past, obviously. So, I mean, if this could be his final run go to actually get Slovenia in the Olympics, I mean, that would be huge, I'm sure, for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which would be great. That would be awesome.
I think it's a travesty that Russia isn't in. And players shouldn't have to be penalized for the decisions of their government. And, like, these are dreams and like, having – and I don't believe they were in the World Juniors. So, like, you're having all these young kids who – you know, not being able to progress in their career. I mean, the World Juniors is huge for scouts and stuff like that, the U18s and all that kind of stuff like that. So I just think it's a travesty. And like you said, it's not a real hockey tournament without Team Russia. I mean, they have a lot of excellent players, multiple MVPs and stuff like that. I think they would be a scary team at any time. And I understand the 4-team tournament, you know, they're trying to just get something going, but hopefully by the time the Olympics go, the IOC will realize that it's going to be better for the sport if they're in there.
Yeah, I watched Miracle over the weekend just because I was so pumped. I just had to get that Herb Brooks motivation in me. It's like, and I was listening to some of his lines. That, I mean, Kurt Russell obviously did incredible in that job, and I was listening to some of those lines. I'm like, man, the Kings need to listen to this speech right now. Like, yeah, you need to play for a team. Like, come on. I was like, man, that movie's incredible. It gives me chills every time I watch it.
It's my favorite sports movie.
That was 100%. Bar none. Stand low a second.
All right, we're getting into the last segment here. A seat at the round table. So the seat at the round table, if people have not heard it before, is our player of the month segment here. Not a very great month, so we might be digging through the barrel here. But we're going to give some stick taps to some of your Kings. So throw in your player of the month in there if you guys are in the chat. But we will start this segment off with Russell.
Ooh, yeah. Like you said, not a lot to pick from. I don't know. I went for the player. I've always been high on this player. I think he played pretty well over this last month. So Alex Seferier, 7 points in 15 games. He was actually fifth among all rookies in the NHL during that time frame, which actually kind of surprising to me. So, man, I just get stoked for this kid. Like you guys have heard, I've been watching and following along with this player ever since he was drafted, and he just hasn't disappointed. I mean, you just have to remind yourself constantly that this is a rookie in the NHL, and he doesn't look like it when he's on the ice. So if he can just continue to grow his game and get more of an opportunity, like we saw, like, I mean, he's getting first power play time and he's producing on that power play too. So, I mean, you can't, like, if you can wait and be patient and see that opportunity get to be given to him a little bit more, I feel like you got a really solid top six winger in the future for LA. So good month for him, and looking forward to the rest of the year.
Another month, though, underneath 5% shooting, and he's had a couple of those there. Is it, you think it's just been snake bitten, or is he not taking the right shots? Like, how do you view that from him?
I think he takes a lot of shots. Probably a lot more. I'd have to look at the numbers, but he probably takes a lot more shots than some of the other forwards. So I feel like that probably hampers his shooting percentage a little bit. I know they've been working with him. Jared Stoll, I don't know if you guys remember, I shared that photo. They've been working with his kind of curl and drag release a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I've actually noticed that during games. So if you watch Laferriere play and you see him shoot the puck, he's been trying that curl and drag release a lot more. And that was something Jared Stoll was working with him. And obviously where you're shooting the puck too helps a little bit. So I'm curious to see if they give him a little bit more of a green light to continue doing that, or if they look for him to find better opportunities. But so far, I love the mindset. Just shoot the puck as soon as you get it. That's always been my MO. So I love it.
All right, Joe, who is getting your seat at the round table?
Boy, this month could have gone a lot worse if it wasn't for Big Save Dave. In his seven games, 3-1-3. So he picks up points in six out of the seven games. 920 save percentage during that time. And in the month of January was 11th in the NHL in goals save above expected per evolving hockey. So in a month where there wasn't a whole lot to speak of, David Rittich held up his end of the bargain, and he really came up big, because imagine where the Kings wouldn't be without the 3-1-3 David Rittich in the month of January.
Man, remember we were talking about teams probably going to pick him up on waivers at the beginning of the year? I mean, too. Like, I don't know why teams didn't. It didn't make any sense the way he was playing at the preseason. He looked incredible. And we're continuing to see it.
Yeah. This is another thing, though. We talked about hashtag goalies and why the Kings are a perfect fit because they don't give up high danger chances and all that stuff. Do the Kings under Hiller, depending on the changes, is there a slight sacrifice if he changes the style of play? And we don't know. I don't know. We suspect that he's here to give a little bit of a kick to the offense. Can they do that without sacrificing, you know, a generally staunch defense group? And if they do that, if they can't do that, and they do sacrifice some of the defense, then hashtag goalies becomes a little bit of a more risky play for a team where it was a no-brainer in the offseason. It was a fantastic job by Blake to do what he did with the goalies. We'll see how if that can continue with a potentially new system.
Kind of bit us a little bit with the Cam Talbot situation.
I genuinely don't think it did. Who the hell had Cam Talbot making the All-Star team?
Yeah.
So you squeezed that orange, to borrow a phrase from fantasy baseball podcast and Fangraphs. Like, you squeezed the juice out of that orange. Like, they've gotten everything out of him, and there still may be more. He came back to earth a little bit. He wasn't going to play at a 9:30 all season, so of course he's going to come back to earth a little bit. I suspect he'll have better games ahead. It's the ebbs and flows of goalies that are million-dollar goalies. Like, that just is what it is. But, again, think of where the Kings would have been without how well Talbot played in the beginning of the season. So their system allows it to work. So you're just – Copley played well last year. It's Talbot this year. Now it's Rittich. Like, hopefully Rittich has enough in the tank to get it through the end of the season, or at least enough for Talbot to pick it back up. Like, you know, we all talked about Talbot can't be playing this many games, you know. So maybe, you know, this kind of him not playing as much will be a benefit to him. But no, I don't think it bit, because look at what they got out of him. They got an all-star caliber goalie for the first half of the season, and he didn't play well, just as the other rest of the team didn't play well. So, yeah. You know, I still think the strategy, it was the correct one for this offseason and for the way the team played under Todd McClellan.
Well said. Well, I'm going to throw it here to a guy. He had 3 goals and 7 assists. He was also had a percentage of 76 IPP. And for people that don't know what that means, he was on the ice, or he was a part of the goal 76% of the time when there was a goal scored on the ice. Overshooting percentage of 11% and 6 first assists. Out of the 7. So doing the damage there. And that's one Philippe Dano for my seat at the round table this month. Always playing at the top of his game, always pushing, doing the dirty stuff that needs to get done. That line had a couple bad games, but for the most part was pretty consistent throughout that month with him and Trevor Moore. Does a lot of the things on the penalty kill, the number one penalty kill in the league there. So my seat at the round table goes for Philippe Dano for sure.
Yeah, I love it. You can never question his work ethic. Yep. And, I mean, that's going to be a player that the Kings are going to have to lean on. And I know Hiller's probably going to have to lean on to get him out of this rut. But I don't know. I'm curious to see who they play with Dano, or who Hiller plays with Dano. Joe, you weren't really here at the beginning. Do you expect to see – maybe you did mention it. I'm just kind of forgetting. Or do you expect to see a lot of lineup changes? And if you do, or if you – like, what lineup changes would you make?
I don't know if I'm expecting lineup changes. I would like to see, Lewis out of the lineup, start there. I think that in as long as Lazat is out, Turcotte probably has to be the fourth line center. That said, I continue to be intrigued by Turcotte playing the wing with Dubois and Laferriere. I think Jared Anderson Dolan can handle fourth line center duties. I think he's capable, but if the team doesn't want to do that, then Turcotte's got to be the guy. I wouldn't mind seeing Fiala back with Dubois to give him another shot. Maybe there's your opportunity to give Kaliev his second chance, a breath of fresh air with a fresh start, I should say, with Moore and Deneau. Maybe that's something that we see.
How about this? I'll cut you off real quick. I mean, it sounds like Victor Arvidsson's going to be back sooner rather than later. Where do we play? Let's talk about that. Where are we playing Victor Arvidsson?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I would play, I mean, I guess it depends on what they want to do. Where they're at with like Fiala with Deneau and Moore. Like, I guess you could easily put Arvidsson right back with Deneau and Moore. Put Fiala with Dubois and Laferriere, and then Turcotte, Kaliev, Grundstrom. I think that's a really intriguing lineup. It provides, when you've got Turcotte, Kaliev, and Grundstrom on the fourth line, that's a pretty, there's options there to put pucks in the net. You could also put Arvidsson with Dubois too, if they didn't want to break up that line. So that's an option too, which I'm open to kind of any of those type of combos. For me, Russ, God, why does it always come out to like, here's Joe hating on Trevor Lewis again? Really, any lineup that takes Lewis out of the lineup, I think I'm genuinely going to be okay with figuring out what combinations may work. I hate to say it, but
we try not to pick on individual players here, but like, Let's be real here. Here's this team's obviously pointing to offense being the big detriment of this team's recent failures, I guess.
Yeah.
So if you're looking to ignite a little bit of offense, it's so weird to say because he was one of the goal scorers in the last game. But, I mean, a lot of that was because of the work from Turcotte and Byfield behind the net. Yeah. He just kind of stood there and shot the puck. Which obviously, great play, so it's good to see. Sure. I'm not going to discredit that. But, come on here. Like,
Least offensive upside among every forward, any forward that has touched, put a Kings jersey on this season. It's just, why can't we say that?
Like, I'd probably be fine just resting him. And if you want to just play him in the playoffs just to get that veteran leadership there, maybe I could see that, but the way Jared Anderson Dolan has been playing lately, I think you have to find a way to keep him in the lineup. Grundstrom, I don't know. I'm in and out on Grundstrom. Like, that's the thing with him. Like, I feel like the leash with Kaliev I talk about, and Grundstrom just has a way longer leash.
Yep,
I feel
that's
like
fair.
Even though fair. Yeah, so I don't know.
Very fair.
Like, you feel like if you can get a fourth line of Turcotte, Anderson Dolan, Grundstrom, Kaliev there. Sign me up for that. And then when you get Lizotte back, maybe you get Lizotte, Turcotte, and Anderson Dolan together. That sounds pretty fun.
I would say I would like to see either one of Arvidsson or Fiala with Dubois. And that's assuming they don't break up the top line or anything like that, because I think he could use somebody with a little bit of finishing touch. You know, I think he and Laferriere got a little thing going there, so I would like to see somebody with a little bit of finishing touch. So I wouldn't mind seeing that back together.
What do you think, Brandon? Where do you want to play Arvidsson?
Yeah, I think it's the time for them to switch some things up. And I've been a blender guy for like the last couple of weeks. I wouldn't mind seeing again more with PLD. And I know they're not going to want to switch that together, but You could have PLD with Arvidsson and Fiala on the second line, and then have Deneau more PLD and Laferriere on the third line. So I think there might be some situation there where that works out. But it just, how many minutes is he going to be able to take? I mean, obviously, I don't think they're going to put him in. I don't think exactly. They're going to put him in the lineup if his back's not healthy. So he should be cleared to go, but I'm more interested in where Victor Arvidsson is going to be on the power play, because we've been talking about that right-handed shot below the net, and see kind of how he would get that going. They utilized that a lot in Hiller's system last year. And so if they can get Laferriere, maybe in that role, and then Arvidsson to kind of that cohesion, get some more right-handed sticks, maybe see uptick in some power play would be very interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I would hope that they would just run the same first power play unit that they ran last year and just switch Vilardi with Byfield, who's looked really good, obviously, playing up in front of the net there. So, but yeah, for me, like, I would – like, the way Fiala's been playing lately, he needs to turn his game around. He's been acting too much like a diva lately. You can just see it on the ice and see it. I could bet you $1,000 that's the player Doughty was talking about. So he just seems like that type of player, type of guy. So hopefully he can turn it around. I know we talk about Fiala, just you live and die by him, but there's been a lot more dying with Fiala than there has been living lately. So he's got to turn it around. And I think if you're able to get the best out of Fiala, you can just move him down a line, playing with Dubois and LaFerrière. You don't have to give him too many minutes. You don't have to put him in a situation where you have to rely on them to be really stout defensively. And then you can have Arvidsson, if he's healthy enough, like Randon said, can play the minutes that he can play with this on the second line with the night, you get the nice line back together. We've seen how great that line can be. They need a reliable line that they could just throw out on the ice and produce them a good 30, 45 seconds of play. So if Arvidsson's healthy, get him back with Deneau and Moore, you can move Fiala down with Dubois and LaFerrière and have them be that kind of situational line that you can throw out there, maybe for offensive zone faceoffs, just really put him out there just to be pure offense. And if Hiller is the offensive guy that we all kind of hear that he is, that seems like the type of line that he would run.
I know you're down on Fiala, but guess who had the most points in the month of January for the Kings?
That's Kevin Fiala. Thing. That's the thing. Live and die by Fiala.
It's Manny, I mean, being Manny, as they used to say, exactly, over there in Boston. So we'll see how it goes out. It'd be interesting to see the line combinations come Thursday for their practice. Us at Hockey Royalty will be on the beat, as they used to say. You can find us at hockeyroyalty.com, hockey_royalty, at JW Paterino, at NHL Russell, at Rando Commando 24. All rain coverage coming to you at Kopitar for HOF. Please hit that like and subscribe button. Tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your girlfriend about this podcast. We need to get us up over 1,000 subs. Appreciate you guys being in here. You don't understand how much we care about you guys and gals in here and making this podcast grow. We love every single week we get to come on here with you guys. So appreciate that. And as always on this podcast, go Kings, go.